continue on side two.
We were the ones who developed the use of the recreation buildings in South Park for those people in the community that had, you know, carrying on recreational activities. For example, we promoted the first indoor horse shows at South Park, the first indoor track and field meets in South Park at these buildings. And also, we were the first ones to introduce baseball at the South Park Fairgrounds. You know, so many years they didn't want to tear up the field. And so we tried to pioneer in many new activities for the residents of Allegheny County. And of course, then I became program director for the county fairs in 1939, 40, and 41, when we held seven-day county fairs. And now, of course, we haven't had any fairs in Allegheny County for 3 or 4 years, but strangely, I'm serving on a committee now that approved, after a conservative study, and recommended to the present Board of County Commissioners continuance of the county fairs beginning next year. As a matter of fact, I have another meeting on Friday morning. But for many years, when I was program director at the county fair, those were all-day fairs and started, you know, early in the morning until late at night. We had the fairgrounds going with all kinds of program activities, ethnic groups and amateur shows and all kinds of athletic exhibits and horse shows and track and field and harness racing.
Now, let's go back a little bit to your family life after you were married. Yeah. Will you tell us about your children?
Well, we have four children. My oldest daughter, Mildred Florence, we call her Googie, was born in 1931. She was born in April 1931. And then Irene is now about 43, I believe. And then it was Sonny, Ralph, and Wayne, who was born the year that the State of Israel was born, 1948. Wayne will be 30. That's right, he'll be 30 this June the 3rd, and we'll be in San Antonio. We'll see him at that time. So we have four children, and we have 16 grandchildren and 2 great-grandchildren.
Can you tell us about your social life as a young married person and when your children were growing up? Did your family take vacations?
We were, because of my work, especially at the time at the settlement, when I was at the Iron Cotton Settlement, we got married, my work was afternoon and evening. And of course, when days off would come, we were always together out at the parks. I can remember the children going out there. And then, of course, my wife and children would go to Emma Farm for the mother's trip, which they had sponsored at that time. And then when I went with the county parks, I was at North Park one day or South Park the other day, and then on the weekends, they would come with me, and I would sit them in a grove where we could enjoy a picnic, and her sister sometimes would come along with their children. So even though I was doing my job, overly doing my job, I still I was with the children on Saturday or Sunday. But we were a very happy family.
Was your home life religious in your home?
Not as religious as my wife's parents, who were extremely religious. My wife's father and my wife's father had a beard. And wife's mother used to wear the wig.
Shadel.
Yeah, shadel. That's how religious they were. And we lived with them for a while. When we were first married, I'm not sure whether, I think we lived with them for a while, that's right. And of course, I picked up a lot of Yiddish from them. Of course, my father could speak about 7 languages. My mother was fluent in Yiddish and Romanian. And of course, they would speak Yiddish and English. But with living with my wife and her parents, I had to pick up. So I got to know a little bit of Yiddish.
How do you spell your wife's last name?
Zapler.
Where did you live when your children were growing up?
We lived what area? We lived in the Hill District. Mm-hmm. We lived on Center Avenue. I remember Dr. Ashinsky, whose father, Rabbi Ashinsky, was well known in those days in religious matters. We lived there with a family by the name of Friedman. One of the girls married Linder, who was a Link Hill company right across the cellar. Then we lived on Epiphany Street. Let me see, I'll get my bearings. We lived on Center, Protectory Place. We lived on Cliff Street and also on Wick Street. When I went overseas in 19, I left Pittsburgh in November of 42, and his family were living on Wick Street. And then when I left, my wife got quite a scare when one of the fellows that used to work around the house, an old Negro gentleman who was drunk, came in. She looked up from her bed in the middle of the night and she saw him standing in her bed, and she never went back to that house again. She was scared the devil out of me. She went to live up in East End on Black Street and then on Bishop Street. So when I got back from overseas, she was living with her children on Black Street. On Bishop Street, that's right.
And then your family has lived in the East End ever since?
Yes, yes, they lived in the East End ever since, of course, the children got married.
And your children went to school where?
They went to the Fulton School and the Peabody High School.
Can you tell us any changes that you see in the area, in the neighborhoods, from those days to now?
Well, what kind of changes?
Well, economic changes or cultural changes or political changes?
Well, politically, of course, right after the Depression when Roosevelt came in, you could see the Republicans all changing into the Democratic system. Conditions have, in my way of thinking, improved considerably. I mean, people are much better off today than they ever have been, considering all the complaints. But in many, many ways, people have more advantages today as far as education, as far as employment, even though there is an employment situation, medical care, hospital care, with the Social Security benefits and the Medicare, all of these things. There's no question, as I've seen it, I've been closely related to community activities and civic activities, and people today are, on the whole, much better off. And then I think, too, especially around Alicante, I think conditions as far as ethnic group relationships are much better than they ever have been. Even though we had the big riots here when things went bad up on the Hill years ago on Center Avenue and Fifth Avenue and all around it. I think on the whole, though, especially with the blacks, the black children, educational opportunities are much greater, as I see it, compared to what they were when I was a youngster. And the opportunities are there for them, much more so. And there's less crying about discrimination. As far as the Jews in Pittsburgh, there's, I think, less discrimination, a better recognition of a jury than there was in the 1920s or 30s. I think there are better relations as far as the churches are concerned, and especially with the Catholic Church and many of the other churches, a better relationship with the jury.
Can you give any examples in the work that you did when your children were growing up, or did your children encounter, to show the difference of the betterment between the relations now?
Well, when I was a youngster, when I went from the Hill, if I had to go into town and came down Webster Avenue, in those days there was quite a large Italian group there. And of course, at the church at that time, in their teachings, I think they were a little strong towards not anti-Semitism, but the fact that the children felt that the Jews had killed Jesus, and I walked down and they'd say, "Hey, you killed Christ, didn't you?" And they would smack me around. And of course, later on, when I walked down, they'd say, "Do you believe in Jesus?" And I got smart, or at least I thought I was smart. I said, "Sure, he was Jewish like I am." And you know, that sort of, I remember it shocked them when I said that. And I said, "Yeah, he was one of our boys." Well, they didn't expect that kind of approach. And they'd see me, they wouldn't bother me from then on. At least that bunch was down there. But you see, today, you don't get that as much. At least in my contacts with thousands of boys and girls, there seems to be a better relationship. The big problem came about when many of the colored kids came into schools, and there was a difficulty between the white and colored, which there still is, you see, which we had the Taylor Aldridge, and we had a bit of it in Peabody, and where you had these mixtures. But the feeling today, I think there's a better relationship than there ever has been. And I think that's number one because the Catholic Church has stopped its business of teaching that the Jews are responsible for the death of Jesus. And that I think that's a very important factor. And that the Passion play around it overseas has been changed. And that's another thing which local people know about. The only thing is they still have the Passion play over here in the South Side, which I know we have discussed. And I was a member of ADL with B'nai B'rith, and we were concerned too about, for example, some of the statements that the Pittsburgh Press was letting through, and we met with the editor, and that was Dr. Eli Goldstein and myself who were representing B'nai B'rith at the time. And then, of course, now you know there's a lodge called the Eli Goldstein B'nai B'rith Lodge.
Let's talk about some of the organizations that you belonged to and your community involvement with them.
Well,
all of them.
Oh,
you stand on one foot.
Well, you know, it's strange. I've been the president of about 16 different organizations, believe it or not, in Pittsburgh and Allegheny County. I was president of the Young Men's Club at the Romanian Shul on Robert Street way back. When Solomon, the attorney, and I were part of a committee that formed the first Jewish men's organization in Allegheny County. And then I became president of the Tri-State Swimming Coaches Association. That's quite a few years ago. I was very active with the Knights of Pythias, where I was a chancellor commander and a district deputy. Then I was president, what they call the Noble Grand, of the Odd Fellows, the Montefiore Lodge of the Odd Fellows. I was president of the Optimist Club of Pittsburgh, and also I was president of the Midwest Jewish Center's Athletic Conference for about 2 years. So, and of course, I've been president, I was president of the United Bessarabians. Now, did you ever hear of the United Bessarabians? These were refugees that came here to this country many, many years ago and formed an organization because they came from Bessarabia. My brother-in-law was very active with that group, and so when he passed away, his wife asked me, used to go to all the dinners and so forth, and she asked me if I wouldn't help out, and I became president of United Bessarabians for a number of years, and we raised a lot of money. Every year we sent the money to Israel, up until last year when we just couldn't, one by one the members had died off, and we couldn't get anybody to work on it. We used to have a big dinner every year at B'nai Israel, and so we'd send this money like to 30 or 40 families in Israel. We'd send them $25 every holiday until last year, and whatever funds were left over, I turned over to the to the Jewish Federation and United Appeal. But I was very active with that group.
And the ADL of the B'nai B'rith?
Yeah, I was active with the B'nai B'rith, and I was one of the charter members for a Steel City Lodge of B'nai B'rith. And then I was vice president of the Anis Jeshurun Synagogue for a couple of years, up until this year. So, and also I'm on this new committee, which is the Synagogue Federation Committee. Right now there's a new committee here in Pittsburgh, you may not know about it, but representatives from all of the synagogues are trying to work an alliance with the Federation so there's a better relationship between the synagogues and the Federation. Not that they need money, for the schools, but perhaps their object may be eventually to have enough funds to carry on our Jewish schools.
Is this all the synagogues in the city?
All the synagogues have been invited to join, and Al Smallover of he's been one of the main organizers, the Tree of Life with Dinkin up there. So we've had a number of meetings, and it's a worthwhile project. It's nothing, it isn't anything that we've originated in Pittsburgh. I've been doing it in L.A. for some time to establish what we think is important for a relationship between the community and the Federation.
To go on with your life, you worked at with the city parks. The county parks from 1930.
With the city,
Mm-hmm.
I was chief life-saving examiner for the city of Pittsburgh for 40 years, from 1933, when I set up the lifeguard test for all lifeguards of the city of Pittsburgh, and also for the county of Allegheny, which up until this year I've been giving, and those were, so I probably examined more prospective lifeguards than anybody in the world.
Interesting. Before we go on with your business life, let's talk about the war years and politics, if you want to comment on that.
Well, let's see. In 1941, when that hit, of course, rationing came in 1942, things sort of slowed down as far as activities in the county parks. And I became quite restless, and I was approached by the American National Red Cross to see if I wouldn't come down to Washington and be interviewed for a possible situation as far as recreation. See, in World War II, the only group that was permitted to go overseas was the American National Red Cross. Now, in World War I, you had the Salvation Army, the Jewish Welfare Board, the Knights of Columbus, the YMCA. Everybody was over there, and we were owning that war for about 9 months. And so everybody was under everybody else's feet. Red Cross got a bad reputation because all their job was in World War I was to work as a liaison between the soldier and the home. So the Salvation Army that was already over there was giving the soldiers coffee and donuts. And so to this day, that's paid off for Salvation Army, which is probably the richest organization in the world, believe it or not. Right, perhaps wealthier than the Catholic Church. But nevertheless, in 1941, when World hit, the Secretary of War, Stimson, said the only ones go overseas will be the American National Red Cross, and they will represent the American public and the families in whatever area they can to work with the GIs. So when I went down to Washington for an interview, they asked me if I wouldn't go over because of my recreation background.
Now, what had you been doing in Pittsburgh at that point?
When I was recreation director with the county park. So, in talking about recreation, I have to go back a little bit. I was president of the Allegheny County Association for Health Physical Education, which is made up of all the elementary, high school, and college teachers in Allegheny County. The first Jew to ever be president of the Allegheny County Association, for all the teachers at that time. But anyways, to get back, when I came out of Washington, I came back and I said to my wife that they wanted me to go over there, and I said, I don't know what to do. I felt awful restless, and I felt I had to do something. She said, well, if you feel that you have to go, then you go ahead. And I said, what are you going to do with the three children? She said, don't worry, I'll get a job, and I'll which she did. So she got a job with Frank and Cedars. She had three children at the time.
Oh, I see.
See? And Wayne came after I came back from India, and they said when you're in India, the climate's going to play hell with you. That's not true, because Wayne came. Anyways, so I went down to Washington, D.C. in November of 1942. I was in training for a while. Then they shipped us to San Francisco, and we weren't permitted to say a word about where we were going or when. You know how things were in 1940. She doesn't remember, but you do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, I remember.
My father remembers.
Anyways, so we shipped out of San Francisco, and then about 50 miles out, we opened up the envelopes, and it said, Bombay, India. And it didn't know where we were.
This was in
1943, January of 43. We got to Bombay, India, and then we went from Bombay, India to Karachi, and from Karachi by train clear across to Calcutta, and then from Calcutta we flew up to the area called the Assam, and I was a recreation worker. My job was to work with the groups as a recreation person and as a field director, working with the GIs, information letters coming back from home, and questions and whatever had to be done related to them and help them on their rest trips and so forth. And then we opened up, I became the assistant club director. I opened up the first Red Cross Club for GIs on the Lido Road, which led from Lido, India, up into Burma, down to the west coast of China. So this was the first Red Cross Club for GIs, and I became promoted to a club director. And then I moved up from there. I went to a place called Lido, where I opened up the first recreation stand for troops moving up and down the road. General Stilwell used to stop in sometimes to get a cup of coffee. He had no insignia, and they would say, what's that old man doing in the Army? And he had a campaign hat on. But anyways, we opened fresh food, coffee, and food place, free food and coffee, and we opened up the first tent for repairing of clothing for the GIs. I had a couple of Mohammedans working. Selling their clothes, and we opened up the first exchange library for the GIs for books. They could come in and take their books and bring back their books, and we give them new books. And also, we started to give out phonographs and needles and records that I got from Calcutta. And I opened up 79 day rooms for the GIs from northern India down through Burma to the west coast of China. 79 day rooms, which we did because they had no special service at that time. So we got special permissions from the Red Cross to buy this furniture, which was movable and portable, you know. And so we did 79 day rooms, and we opened up a lot of recreation rooms for them. In the jungle. Now, it was this terrible country. You can just visualize jungle country and everything made out of bamboo and how muddy it got when the monsoon season hit. And then I was transferred down to Calcutta because I became supervisor of clubs in one of the regions, one of the three regions, and I had charge of about 30 clubs from Calcutta within a radius of 500 miles of Calcutta. And I had all these workers. We had Red Cross girls coming up in the States. And these were girls who were accountants or teachers or recreation or phys ed people. And, you know, everybody. Before you went Red Cross, you were screened pretty thoroughly from the day you were born. And many of these girls were wonderful. I mean, to give up the comforts of the state and come live in jungle country where they got maybe dysentery and where they became unwell. They were unwell maybe for 2 or 3 months. That's not bad to eat. But, and sometimes we had to ship them back. So we had some very, very wonderful girls. One of the women I had was a girl by the name of Gogo Berenson, whose mother is Madame Schiaparelli. And Gogo was a wonderful worker, and she volunteered. She thought maybe they would send her where her husband was in Italy with Major General Clark, but they sent her to India. But she did a wonderful job. her daughter is Marisa Berenson, the movie star.
Well, she wasn't an American, was she?
No.
She was a French, or?
She's, her mother's French, but Berenson, this, her name, Berenson, I don't know, she married an American officer, I believe.
And
she was
were,
on my staff.
The Red Cross was not just working with Americans.
No, mostly mostly Americans. My job, of course, was working with mostly Americans. But if they came in, like Calcutta, the British Tommies would come in, and the French would come in, the Indian soldiers would come in, and so forth. But then I came back to the States for a couple of weeks, went back to India, and I was promoted to assistant director in charge of club planning for China, Burma, and India. And then before I left, came back to the States, I was promoted to regional director in charge of all Red Cross operations on the Lido-Stilwell Road. That was the largest of the three American regions. And of course, that was quite an honor. I was 34 years old. And of course, I suppose being Jewish, I'm proud of being Jewish, and it, you know, that I tried to do the best I could so nobody could point their finger at me, and I got these promotions.
Were there very many Jewish people working with the Red Cross at those times?
I would say percentage-wise, about the same as we have. I would say about 3 or 4%. But we had some attorneys from Buffalo that were there. They were field directors. We had a few girls that were there working with the Hospital Recreation Service. But in my area, as region director, I had a staff of about 1,200, and I was in charge of all the staff for hospital recreation, field directors, assistant field directors, train mobile workers, and I had an office staff. I had six supervisors. One of my supervisors was the dean of physical education at Pomona University. One was the dean of women at Holyoke. One was the recreation director for the city of St. Louis. One was in charge of all Red Cross activities in the state of Ohio, so I had a very competent staff. I know Mom was a little jealous because he didn't get the job and I got it.
Who was?
One of the men that was working. He was a wonderful guy, but these things happen. But that was a wonderful experience, and I came home in December of 1945, went back to work with the county until April of 46, when I went to work with Mr. E.L. Bronstein of the Hommes Wagner Company. And I worked there until about April of 1947, when I went to the YMHA as the Health and Phys Ed Director, and also as the Director of Laura Y. Camp. 1947, and I was with them until 1960, and I left for 2 years to take over another situation which didn't work out, and I came back to the Y in 1963. And I was with the Y from 1963 to 1966, and I went with Leon Falk to Chatham Center, where I stayed until the Hyatt people took over in 1976, and I left on January 1st, 1976.
Now, from 66 to 76, you were doing what at Chatham Center?
I was safety director and health club director. They found out that I had completed my course at the University of Pittsburgh in industrial safety engineering, so they made me. See, that's when OSHA came in. You know what OSHA is, huh?